This podcast comes from another one of our brilliant ambassadors, Charlie, who actually was our first ever ambassador and is in charge of our autism awareness projects. Charlie has won national recognition for her autism awareness work with the Multi Schools Council, and she does so much to continue raising the profile of everything we do. She also runs our Instagram page along with another one of our ambassadors and is so passionate about breaking down perceptions. This is a wonderful podcast to listen to if you have any relation to autism or you are interested and you want to find out more. So, Charlie, how did you get involved with the Multi Schools Council?
In all honesty, I've been involved from the very start. I don't actually quite remember exactly, how it just happened. And now I'm here, 5 years later, 6 years later.
Remind you, Charlie, because I do know you, I was asked to run the school council at Marketfield and you were part of that school council at the time. You'd been nominated by your class. And it was actually you who said, let's go forward and create a multi-schools council. What would be your advice then, Charlie, to children who sometimes maybe they don't want to say an idea or say something because they think, oh, there's no point, no one's going to listen? You're living proof that people do listen. What would be your advice to those young people?
I mean, don't do it in a confrontational way, firstly.
Yeah.
Find the right place. So firstly, make it very strategic. And secondly, if you're nervous about it, write it down, send it in a letter. I don't know. Start a petition if you need mass support. Mm. So just think outside the box.
No, that's some good advice, Charlie, especially about, thinking outside the box as well. You have obviously thought outside the box. You've done some fantastic things. One of them being the autism awareness projects that you've wanted to try and start and the things that you've put together. Why is autism such a passion for you, Charlie? Why do you want to tell more people about autism?
I mean, I'm a bit biased because I'm autistic myself. Yeah. But there's loads of not negative, but sort of repetitive stereotypes in the media. So you see people like Sheldon Cooper, they're quite rigid, quite sort of atypical kind of representation. Or you see them sort of on the people on the other end of the spectrum that have loads and loads of support needs, which means it's what you need is what you need. But there just seems to be no in between, and or often especially with things like the undateables. I'm using this as an example. It seems to be autism or learning difficulties in general, people just sort of see you as more childish or maybe younger. Okay, sometimes you're mentally younger, fair enough, but it's almost sort of you're putting them in a childlike caricature, when actually sometimes when talking about sort of more mature issues like dating and love and etc, etc.
Yeah, and you think maybe that people update the skills that some people with autism may have, or they basically mollycoddle them because they think they can't think. Is that what you think?
Also, and also people don't quite understand the difficulties when you are sort of you're not quite the one end of the spectrum where you have loads and loads of support, but you're not a complete genius, and actually that everybody's autism or even their learning difficulties are all different. So actually you're never going to meet one person that's the same. So that's what I try to make my program based on, is I try to make it based on more of an individualistic approach instead of more of a textbook here, characteristics that people have, and this is what sort of a blanket cover of it.
That's a really good point, Charlie. And as you mentioned, you're the best person to talk about it, or other people who have autism are the best people to talk about it because you understand it the most. But you can also talk from another perspective, can't you, Charlie? Because you have a sister. And do you want to talk a bit more about your sister?
So I have a twin sister. We're both on the spectrum, but her autism consists of a lot more sort of not quite behavioural difficulties, but she has a lot more, especially during this time, she's very sort of aware of uncertainty, and that makes her quite anxious. And then she has echolalia.
Mm.
So she often will repeat the same.
Yeah, sorry, Charlie. What does that mean?
So that means where you sort of repeat sort of certain phrases and stuff, or you'll sort of just keep talking and talking about the same thing. It's a form of stimming, I think. I'm not entirely sure, but essentially at the moment, all she's doing, because she wants to see this particular film, all she talks about is, I want to go see Onward, I want to go see Onward, I want to go see Onward. And it's harder to engage her in learning activities. You have to very much cater it towards her and how she works. So,
And I suppose the reason you're saying about this time and you're using those words is because obviously we find ourselves in lockdown. So do you think that in across this country and other countries, there'll be children that will be finding it particularly hard? But why do you think they'll be finding this time particularly hard? If they have a diagnosis of autism, a bit like your sister, maybe on the severe end of the spectrum, why do you think they'll be finding this time particularly hard?
I think it's because, like, partly some of it's not explained very well. So, like, it's like you cannot go out. Like, and actually, with the coronavirus, like, it's, do you know what I mean? You can't see it, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So, like, you can't see, like, all the hospitals and everything like that. You can't go into the hospitals and go, look, this is why. And as well, like, you can't, there's no end date. So, like, with Paris, she's like, it ends on, like, and we don't know. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. We're told at the moment it's like the end of May or the end of June. I don't really know. But as well, I think what's happening is a lot of students with like SEN support needs aren't getting the support that they need because they're at home. Because obviously, like if you have more luckily I'm really lucky. So I have a learning support assistant who sort of phones me every day, every other day to make sure I'm getting on all right. Will talk to me like if I need any help and anything like that. But like, I know, do you know what I mean? If you have someone who has more support needs and you've got parents at home, like if they have a specific way of learning, the parents have to adjust to that on top of their daily responsibilities.
Yeah. So what would be your message, Charlie, at the moment to any children or any parents who may be struggling? What would be your message of support and positivity?
So just go with the flow. Like if some days they can't do it or they don't want to do it, then just leave them be, like pick your battles, because at the end of the day, although education is still really important, regardless of how much support needs or not you have, like go with the flow. So like with Paris, like Marketfield's given her like a couple of sheets and stuff to do at home a day. And sometimes we'll do them. Sometimes we won't. Sometimes we might do some cooking. Sometimes we've just basically tried to cater to their interests. Try and do all the learning around their central interests, because then they might be more likely to do it. But don't force them. At the end of the day, what matters most is like your family unit and like the mental health of everyone in the family. Because like when someone who's more severe on the autistic spectrum is having a meltdown, it's an exhausting experience for them. It's exhausting for the parents. And actually, if they last for hours and hours on end, it disrupts everyone's day. So just take it as you go. Like, you know your kids best. They know, or we know ourselves best at the end of the day.
It's exhausting for you sometimes, Charlie, because obviously you're a sibling, and as you mentioned, there can be meltdowns. Does it have an effect on you?
I mean, it depends. So like with Paris's meltdowns, they're not like the full on, like where she goes out and hits people, and like they're not particularly violent.
Okay.
They're just particularly prolonged. So she'll just sit there for hours and hours, or like a good few hours, just, and it will be sort of repetitive, so she'll calm down and then it will just like come back up again. So like in theory, it's just more like sometimes it's a bit more disruptive. But to be fair, like I have got quite a big space, like, and I have my own room and stuff, so sometimes I can just lock myself away, and just because actually I'm not much help when she has a meltdown. Like sometimes you just have to leave it to it.
I think that's good advice, Charlie, and there may be other people who are listening to this who have a sibling who may have a form of SEN, and they may be finding this time extremely difficult, and being able to actually give them a bit of space, not try and force them to do things, and actually be a bit more understanding can really help them. So I think there's some really good points you made there, Charlie. Just on other areas of things that you currently do, we're obviously stuck in, this is a reason why we're actually doing podcasts and we're reaching out so we can spread awareness. Another way that you lead on, Charlie, to help spread awareness is through Instagram. Tell us a little bit about why you think Instagram is a good tool to break down perceptions about children with special needs.
So like with Instagram, you're sort of getting a whole new sort of generation of a lot of people who have disabilities. You're getting a bigger community because it's a lot of younger people. So you're reaching a younger audience. And actually, like, we're trying to educate like everyone. So like you need your Facebook for your Facebook month, but you also need like an Instagram to target people who are like our age, and actually it's more relatable and it's a format that they prefer.
Definitely. And the reason we've got an Instagram page is because young people themselves have told us at multi-school meetings that it's a really good way to connect with them. But why is it important to educate young people about special needs?
Because we are the future, and actually, like, I think a lot of it starts at school. So a lot of your perceptions, like you might have the kid who has like the one-to-one in class and stuff, and like, do you know what I mean, they might be sort of ciphered off or something like that, because they, do you know what I mean, they might just need a smaller space or whatever. But sometimes that's not explained to the kids, or if it, or it's not explained to the kids in like sort of a, it's like they're different, you're sort of doing this, they're sort of doing their thing. Do you know what I mean? There's not an open dialogue about sort of special needs or like mental health and stuff, that actually they get a comprehensive understanding.
And how do you think it makes those children feel then, that when they're, when they maybe do have a one-to-one, it's not being explained to everyone else why they have a one-to-one, and they maybe feel really different and really singled out? How do you think it makes those young people feel?
I personally not had that experience that much, just because obviously I went to an SEN school, but like in college and stuff, like I have specific arrangements for like my note takers in class, and usually they sit a little bit away from me. But like, do you know what I mean? I think sometimes just being sort of singled out and having an adult next to you makes you sort of othered. Do you know what I mean? You're the special kid, and it draws direct attention. And personally, for me, I don't really like that feeling. Like, it's not because I'm ashamed of like my autism or anything. It's just because like I don't feel like I have to be a walking, talking advocate 24/7 of the day. Yeah. So like, if someone's next to you, then it automatically opens up questions, or like, or it automatically or opens up this sort of uneven power dynamic. So actually, I think sometimes it can be quite isolating as well, depending on like how the room is set up.
So schools, you think, have to think very carefully about how that's done. But it comes back to having a free and open conversation about differences, do you believe? Yeah.
Like, and I think that has to involve the person with like the SEN as well. But say some people like different, some people need different help. So sometimes like people in the class might need a bit more help in maths, a bit more help in English. Sometimes people need help to sit still, like instead of sort of just making it, and actually maybe try and make it less focused on academics. Because I think sometimes when we're talking about disability and SEN, we sort of talk about it in the classroom context. Someone needs help in maths, this person struggles with reading, but you don't really talk about like the social context and actually how that is affected. So like playground, the, I don't know, the school trips and stuff and all that sort of area. You don't really talk about that if it's talked about at all.
Charlie, obviously you spoke about not always wanting to be a walking, talking advocate. And I think that's exactly right, because sometimes people can feel pressured into telling people why they may do things differently. And that's not right. But you have given speeches, haven't you, before about difference and why it's important to build awareness. Just tell us a little bit about, there might be some people that want to speak out about their differences but don't have the confidence to do so. What would your advice be to those young people?
I mean, I would start by just writing or like trying to do it to yourself. Like, because I think sometimes with confidence, it has to come from one way outwards. So even if you sit there and you talk to yourself in the mirror, so just say, like, practice it in your head. So I don't know, just say people ask, oh, why do you have, like, you know, the rain, the sunflower lanyard sort of things?
Yes.
Some people ask why, and do you know what I mean, you explain it in a way that you're comfortable, or even just subtly putting it into your life. So you might start by like wearing sort of a, I don't know, a puzzle piece pin, or I don't know, putting Instagram posts being like SEN, like in your little bio or something, like, and start subtle. Because I think sometimes the idea of like going giving speeches, do you know what I mean, straight from not telling anyone to speaking in front of a crowd of 100 people, say, is actually quite intimidating. But I think if you gradually sort of become more open, or even start to open the dialogue yourself, like with your friends and like with your peers, like it tends to become more natural.
Yeah, young people have told us, again, for our multi-school meetings, that confidence is something they want to learn more about in school and practice and build upon, which led us to, again, speaking to you, Charlie, and Mason, put together a programme, didn't you, all about building confidence. Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit more about that programme?
I mean, so the programme we did, we very specifically focused it around social confidence, but sort of boosting yourself socially. So we did a session on like general friendships and like getting yourself out there. We did a session on like sort of what stuff do you need help with. So we did like the personal profiles, which was suggested by Wendy, which were really, really like helpful to like get the kids to extract things that are really good about themselves. oh, like, they need help on, and actually that built their confidence to speak up about it. And then we did one on sort of finding out, like, information about things that they would like to do. Like, so we had people come in for the last session for the older ones about, like, being an artist or being an author or being, like, an athlete and stuff. Because I think sometimes, like, confidence, although people go fake it till you make it, it's pretty accurate. Like, do you know what I mean? If you sort of not put on a front, like, unhealthily, but if you sort of go, I'm really good today, like, positive affirmations, like, I'm doing really well at this, I'm really good at this, and sort of know where you want to go. I think sometimes it's just about knowing.
Yeah, having a plan, having a bit of a direction of what you want to go and achieve. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and like having a direction of like and a sense of self. So like if you know that you need help with like your spelling and stuff, that's something that can be worked on. And actually if that's something that's hindering your confidence, then like, do you know what I mean? You can see progress that's being made. So hopefully it'll make it better.
So identifying yourself, what you need to then go and be most confident version of yourself.
Yeah.
What did you get out of leading? So it was a reach out, speak out program, wasn't it? What did you get out of it, Charlie?
I mean, I got out of it that actually, like, that confidence is really subjective, and you can be confident without having to be like really outgoing and bubbly. And actually you can be confident without being sort of outgoing. You cannot be confident whilst being like outgoing and bubbly. Like there were so many different people there for so many different sort of experiences, and bullying was a big sort of effect on confidence. Either sort of were a bit more quiet or tended to avoid more sort of open discussion.
And why were they bullied, Charlie? Can you remember any reasons why?
So a lot of them, I think it was their peers not understanding their differences. And I think, especially with the younger ones, they were just starting to become aware of, like, their needs or their differences. So, like, I think sometimes a label can be really empowering. It can also be quite, like, scary or undefined because you don't quite understand what that means. And I don't think anyone would quite, like, even myself at, like, 18, I don't quite understand what that... I don't think you're ever going to understand it because I just understand it as something that's part of me. I haven't really looked in the depths of it. I'm just like, oh, that's just my autistic trait. And everyone's like, oh, fair enough.
Has it ever held you back, Charlie, from doing anything you want to do?
I mean, I don't think my confidence around like myself, I would definitely say more like, do you know what I mean? Like sort of body image and stuff, like stuff like that's held me back. But like, I think, do you know what I mean? I'm like 17, I'm 18, like, do you know what I mean? Like I've got time to work on myself. And I think confidence, regardless of who you are, is always going to be sort of something that you build up on. So like you might not be confident in one area, you build that up, so now you have to build it up to another area. Like I don't think there's this whole thing of, oh, I'm a fully confident person.
It gives people hope that they may be listening to this podcast, they may not be a very confident person, but they might be taking your words, Charlie, and that it's something you can work on. You can start small and you can grow it. At the moment, what do you think are the biggest challenges to people understanding autism, and maybe why there are still barriers out there for people who have autism? What should people be doing more of?
I think people should be doing more of their own research, because there's so much sort of, and not through like sort of mainstream traditional media, so not edited and constructed usually from a neurotypical point of view. So often it's quite often either sort of dramatic, like emphasized, or dramatic, sort of romanticized. Like there's very few programs that I could personally recommend. Like Atypical is quite a good one. Not like, okay, there's some very stereotypical features, but it also does show what maybe is happening on the inside and like how it feels. So I reckon do your own independent research, like find people on the internet. Like there's such a big autism community in the internet that actually a lot of them are sharing like their experiences of autism, and they are like promoting more awareness of like their difficulties, but also like their interests or like their life in general. And they're showing that actually it's just autism is not just all about them. It's just an additional part of them.
There's some really good points you've made there. Stuff that you said there about how it should not just be done in a particular way to make people be seen in a particular way. And it's really good that you've touched on lots of different areas there around confidence and around not just being seen for your autism, being seen for the person you are. So thank you very much, Charlie, for everything you've added. And if you want to find out more about Charlie's story and the things that Charlie is doing, if you follow our Instagram page at the_multischools_council.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start.